When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Before I begin, a heads up. This episode contains some gruesome and graphic moments. The rescue team was baffled. They couldn't make any sense of the scene. How had these 5 hikers died? And where were the other 4 bodies? It was February 1959 at an icy mountain pass near Siberia. 9 hikers had gone missing there recently, and the rescuers arrived to find 5 bodies scattered about. Some burned, some nearly naked. One had human flesh in his mouth. There was no apparent cause of death, and all 9 hikers were quite experienced. So why had they abandoned their tent and run half-naked into the forest? Had there been an accident? Were they attacked? No one knew. And for 6 decades, those unanswered questions provoked fierce debate and dark conspiracy theories among locals. The Russian equivalent of Roswell. Last year, however, scientists finally determined what happened at that snowy mountain pass. It's a strange tale involving cadavers and a Disney movie. But at long last, we know why those burned, naked, and very dead bodies turned up in the Siberian wasteland. From the Science History Institute, this is Sam Keen and the Disappearing Spoon, a topsy-turvy, science-y history podcast, where footnotes become the real story. In 1959, a 23-year-old Russian engineering student named Igor Dyatlov recruited 8 university friends for an expedition. He wanted to climb a peak in the remote Ural Mountains. The team ranged in age from 20 to 24 and included 2 women. The Soviet government also sent along a 38-year-old minder, making 10 people total. All were experienced skiers and winter campers. They were unbelievably tough as well. On a previous expedition, a hunter accidentally blasted one of them with his shotgun. Instead of waiting for a medevac helicopter, she hopped right up and cheerfully skied 50 miles to the nearest clinic. No sweat. That toughness would prove necessary on Igor Dyatlov's expedition, because they planned to visit the Ural Mountains in February, the harshest time of year there. Despite the danger, the hikers had a grand time on the train trip out. They hid beneath the seats to avoid paying for tickets. One brought a mandolin, which he strummed for everyone to pass the time. After the train, they took a series of buses, trucks, and horse-drawn sleighs to a frontier village. At this point, one hiker bowed out. He was having knee pain, and he told the others to continue without him. He never saw them alive again. The trek began January 28th. It would be 215 miles round trip. The landscape was mostly rolling forests of birch, fir, and cedar trees. The snow was piled pretty deep in places, up to 5 feet. Wind gusts reached 60 miles per hour. On February 1st, the team tried to cross a treeless pass between 2 mountains. One mountain was named Kolat Siikl, or Dead Mountain. The crossing should have been an easy ski, but a blizzard swept in and disoriented them. Instead of slipping through the pass, they ended up climbing the lower slope of Dead Mountain. They realized their error near nightfall. At this point, Igor Dyatlov decided not to retreat downslope a mile, where a forest offered shelter. His team had already climbed pretty high. He didn't want to have to regain the elevation tomorrow. Instead, they would camp on Dead Mountain. To shelter themselves from the wind, the hikers removed the shovels from their packs and dug down 4 feet into the snow. After creating a hollow, they pitched their communal tent inside it. Then they hunkered down to eat and sleep. A few also wrote in their journals, the last living records of them before their deaths. The hikers were scheduled to return home February 12th, but delays were common on long hikes, so when the 12th came and went, no one worried. Then the 13th passed, and the 14th. By the 15th, friends and family were fretting. Where were they? On the 16th, local officials mobilized a rescue party and set out. On February 25th, the rescuers found some ski tracks and followed them to a tent. It was half buried in snow. There were gashes in the tent's walls, as if someone had slashed their way in. Seeing this, the rescuers swallowed hard. Had the hikers been murdered? From the tent, they found some footprints leading away. Oddly, some were barefoot prints. They could see the outline of people's toes. Why hadn't they worn boots? A mile downhill, near the forest, they found the remnants of a fire, as well as two bodies. One was the mandolin player. Both men had patches of scorched, blackened skin and were wearing only underwear. One had also bitten off a chunk of his own hand. Eventually, the searchers found three more bodies scattered nearby, including Igor Dyatlov. All three victims had been trekking uphill, probably toward the tent, but they never made it in the blizzard and froze to death. Search as they might, the rescuers could not find the other four bodies. So they dug out the tent and helicoptered everything back to a police station. There, they examined those mysterious slashes in the tent walls. It seemed like evidence of a crime. But that day, a seamstress happened to be visiting the station to mend some police uniforms. She examined the slashes herself and declared that, yet, the officers were wrong. Her expert eye could see that no one had slashed into the tent. Instead, the campers had slashed their way out. This baffled the police further. Why would experienced winter campers do that? Autopsies soon revealed that all five had died of hypothermia. Meanwhile, a few months later, a hunter passed through the forest beneath Dead Mountain. There he came across a strange pit, 10 feet deep and 250 yards from where the first bodies were found. Peering down, he saw a bed of tree branches, as well as scraps of clothing. He alerted rescuers, who returned to the scene. They probed around the pit with long poles, which emerged with chunks of human flesh attached. They quickly dug out the four missing bodies. All four were lying face down in a buried creek. But that was not all. The first five bodies had all been relatively intact and uninjured. Not these four. Autopsies revealed cracked ribs and fractured skulls. One man had shards of bone driven into his brain. More gruesomely, their faces were missing eyeballs, tongues, and lips. Two of the hikers were wearing clothes from their dead comrades. At this point, for unknown reasons, Soviet party officials swept in and shut the investigation down. They declared that an avalanche had killed the party, then confiscated all documents related to the matter. But that explanation didn't sit right with people. Hunters who lived near Dead Mountain had never seen an avalanche there. Plus, avalanches leave obvious signs afterward. Acres of dislodged snow. But the rescue team had seen no such signs when they arrived. There were other anomalies, too. Avalanches won't fall unless the snow is sitting on a slope steeper than 30 degrees. But the slope where the hikers camped was gentler than that. Also, avalanche victims rarely die of blunt force trauma, They suffocate. But the four buried victims had shown blunt force trauma. Why? Overall, the avalanche explanation seemed bogus, and the more Soviet officials insisted on it, the more people suspected a cover-up. But a cover-up of what? Given the paltry evidence, conspiracy theories started running amok. Some people blamed Bigfoots and Yetis. Others blamed missile tests gone awry, or a lover's quarrel that spiraled into a Hatfield-McCoy tragedy. Still others cited a supposed CIA plot, or even a hurricane, in Siberia. But no one knew. And there things might have stood, a mess of half-baked, unprovable theories, if not for two determined scientists and the lucky viewing of a Disney movie.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Alexander Puzyrin is a geological engineer in Switzerland. Although born in Russia, he had never heard about the tragedy near Dead Mountain growing up. But in 2019, Puzyrin came across a mention and quickly grew obsessed. He devoured everything he could about the deaths. But unlike other obsessives, Puzyrin had the scientific skills to test the avalanche theory. For additional brain power, Puzyrin recruited another Swiss scientist, Johann Gamm, who runs avalanche simulations. Together, they pored over documents from the case, trying to piece together what happened. And despite all the objections, they realized that the avalanche theory was stronger than people suspected. Again, avalanches require slopes of at least 30 degrees, and the snowy slope below Dead Mountain was gentler than that overall. But beneath that snow, on the ground itself, there was a lot of local variation. The ground was actually more terraced, with waves of flatter and steeper parts. And many of the steeper parts were 30 degrees. The Swiss scientists also found a crucial, overlooked detail. The hikers had dug down into the snow to form a hollow for their tent. Soviet officials had examined a cross-section of that snow and noticed a thin layer of rotten ice. The ice had probably been exposed to the surface months before and melted partly in the sun. Then several feet of snow covered that weak ice up. That left the snow on top in an unstable position. One expert compared it to placing a fat dictionary on a ramp on top of potato chips. Given the slope, the dictionary will be prone to sliding at the slightest disturbance. Similarly, snow can slide over weak ice, too. This sliding of snow over weak ice is called a slab avalanche. Most avalanches involve whole mountainsides of snow. Slab avalanches are smaller, and instead of powdery snow tumbling down, slab avalanches release a single hard dictionary slab all at once. The Swiss scientists began to suspect that a slab avalanche had hit the hikers, so they tried modeling one on a computer. But this proved tricky. The physics of snow is surprisingly complicated. Luckily, around this time, Gamm watched the Disney movie Frozen. The special effects impressed him. The tumbling snow looked quite realistic. So he reached out to the film's animators, who agreed to hand over the code that they used. With this code, the scientists began running simulations. To their delight, the slab avalanche looked promising as a theory. They proposed that the hikers, in digging out the hollow, had disturbed the slab of snow over the rotten ice. And when the slab eventually shifted, the snow buried the hikers. Even a 3-foot-thick slab would have pinned them down under 1,000 pounds of crushing weight. That explained why the hikers slashed their way out of the tent. The door flaps were blocked. It also explained why several of them fled without boots or coats. It was hard enough getting their own bodies out. They probably couldn't even find their boots and coats in the buried tent. Now, however exciting, a slab avalanche could not explain everything. What about the other four hikers with the skull and rib fractures? Avalanches don't normally cause blunt force trauma. To answer this mystery, the Swiss duo looked into some macabre experiments from Detroit. In the 1970s, car makers there took 100 cadavers and slammed weights into them at different speeds. They were investigating car accidents and using the data to design better seatbelts. In their report, the Swiss duo noticed that some of the cadavers had been propped against rigid backgrounds. And, crucially, those cadavers had worse injuries. That was a big clue. Remember, the battered hikers were found in a 10-foot-deep pit with branches spread across the bottom. What if they had been digging a shelter and laid the branches as a floor? And what if the shelter collapsed on them? Several tons of snow would have slammed into the branches. In that case, blunt force trauma seemed likely. The last remaining obstacle to the scientists' theory was a big one: that locals had never seen an avalanche on Dead Mountain. So the duo hired some guides and visited the site to investigate. It was a rough journey there. The wind was so fierce on the way that their snowmobile actually flipped over. But they persevered. At Dead Mountain Pass, they flew drones over to capture aerial footage. And lo and behold, one camera captured exactly the type of avalanche they had predicted. A small slab one. To be fair, locals had never seen an avalanche because slab avalanches are tiny. Plus, winds tend to cover them up. Remember, the 1959 rescue party did not reach the scene until 26 days after the disaster, at which point zero trace remained. Based on all this, we can finally piece together what happened on Dead Mountain the night of February 1st. After getting lost, the hikers dug out a hollow for their tent. Unluckily, the hollow was below a hidden 30-degree slope. The surrounding snow also happened to be lying on top of rotten ice. Eventually, a slab of snow released and crushed their tent. The hikers sliced their way out, but several could not retrieve their boots or coats. And, probably fearing another avalanche, they hurried downhill to the forest and built a fire. Unfortunately, the fire barely helped. Two hikers were especially cold. Desperate to keep warm, they leaned dangerously close to the fire, to the point of scorching their skin. They eventually died of hypothermia. As for why those two were found nearly naked, perhaps their companions removed their clothing afterward and put it on to protect themselves. Or, people freezing to death can experience something called paradoxical undressing. During the end stage of hypothermia, people's minds often get delusional. Also, their bodies begin to rev their internal furnaces, a last-ditch effort to stay warm. But sadly, given their delusions, people think that they're overheating and often strip naked to cool down. It's bizarre, but not uncommon. A delusional mind could also explain why the one hiker bit part of his own hand off. He was going mad. So that explains two of the deaths. And either before or after those two died, three other hikers set out to find the buried tent and grab jackets, boots, and blankets. But in the dark blizzard, they got separated, and each one froze to death alone. That left four hikers alive. Eventually, they left their dead companions, hiked into the woods, and began digging a snow pit for protection. This included laying down pine branches. But more bad luck doomed them. They happened to dig over a local stream that never freezes. The stream had hollowed out a tunnel of ice a dozen feet below. And after they climbed down into the pit, that ice tunnel collapsed and the overlying snow crushed them against the branches. That explains the trauma to their heads and chests. As for why they were missing parts of their faces, again, they were found lying face down in the stream. Their tissue probably either rotted off or small animals burrowed down and scavenged them before the rescue team arrived in May. Overall, the hikers' expertise probably doomed them. Experienced winter campers fear avalanches more than almost anything. So after the slab avalanche hit, the hikers hurried downhill, probably fearing a second, bigger avalanche. That was a textbook smart decision. Usually. But that second avalanche never came. Ironically, if they had been inexperienced amateurs and just stayed put, they maybe could have dug their tent out and survived. Now, some people in Russia refuse to abandon their conspiracy theories here. They continue to blame Yetis or the CIA for the deaths on Dead Mountain. Or, as the area is known today, Dyatlov Pass, after the expedition's leader. But most experts agree that the Swiss team of Puzrin and Gom has solved the mystery. They've given the families of the victims closure at last and closed the books on one of the strangest adventure tales of the 20th century. This is the Disappearing Spoon podcast, brought to you by the Science History Institute. Be sure to check out their in-depth science history podcast, Distillations. You can find it anywhere you get your podcasts or on their website, distillations.org. You can find more incredible stories in my books or at samkeen.com. You can also book me as a speaker there for your school or event. If you like this podcast, please spread the word and support it at patreon.com/disappearingspoon. You can also get bonus episodes and signed books at Patreon. This episode was written by me, Sam Keen. It was produced by Mariel Carr, Rigoberto Hernandez, and Sarah Kaplan. Our sound design, scoring, and mixing is by Row Home Productions. Row Home's creative director is Alex Lewis. John Myers is Row Home's executive producer. Thanks for listening.
Row Home Productions.
Save big money on your kitchen project at Menards. We carry everything you need to turn your kitchen dreams into reality. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free design estimates today. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big.